Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Since the amalgamation of the town of Port Hope and the former Hope Township in 2001, it has been a strained marriage. Taxes, services, and the urban versus rural tensions have fueled heated debates over the years. The ongoing battle over the handling of a low-level radioactive waste reserve fund used to compensate rural residents went all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, only to be dismissed. You will learn more about what that is in the interview. There were also attempts to reverse the amalgamation in 2014. Those went nowhere. The current system divides the municipality into two wards, with Ward 1 consisting mainly of urban residents living in the town. It has four councillors. Then there is Ward 2 that is mainly rural residents. It has two councillors. The mayor is elected by both wards. On today's show, Port Hope Deputy Mayor Vicky Mink will discuss a public review of the boundaries and ward system initiated by council recently. She will discuss the fairness of the current system and its ability to represent both urban and rural residents. Mink will explore the rationale for the review and the nearly $250,000 being spent on this just before the municipal election next fall. I'm so pleased to have with me today Port Hope Deputy Mayor Vicky Mink. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Why has Port Hope Council started a comprehensive review of its composition and ward boundaries?
Well, this was actually brought forward earlier this year by two members of council. They brought forward the request in a notice of motion to staff. So council discussed it, and ultimately we voted in favor of going forward with a ward boundary review. We haven't done one yet since amalgamation, so it is overdue. Here we are.
Who were the two councillors who brought it forward?
Well, two members of council. So it was brought forward by the mayor and Councillor Todd Attridge.
Why now? Why not sooner? Why not wait till after the municipal election? Why now?
Well, that's a question. So I can't answer that question on their behalf. So that is a question that is circulating in the community. Why now? We are going into an election year. And from my understanding, it does take a few years to review everything that's involved with a ward boundary review, especially for a municipality that hasn't had one in 25 years. So whether this is actually complete before the next election or whether it will carry over into the following term, we'll have to wait and see how that rolls out.
What is meant by fair and effective representation? Because that was part of the press release that came out.
Yeah, so right now, Port Hope is divided into two wards. So we have Ward 2, which I represent, which is the rural area. And we have two elected representatives from Ward 2. And then we have four elected representatives from Ward 1 who are elected at large. So it's not divided into wards. And then we also have the mayor who's elected at large from either municipality. So the idea behind this, to my understanding, and the reason why it was brought forward, was to allow greater representation across different boundaries, perhaps.
Does this imply that the current system is not fair or effective?
Well, it could be. There's different people's opinions on that. So Ward 2 has a very distinct, some would argue, cultural difference But there's also a difference in service levels. There's a number of different things that that differentiate the two wards between each other. There is also to come to question when you have four or five members of council down in the far southeast corner of the municipality and a vast land elsewhere, that how often are those communities visited and seen, and how often are the issues actually understood firsthand?
What do you see as the shortcomings of the current system?
Well, right now, Ward 2 has two elected representatives, and there is an expectation that we have an equal voice at the council table. And with amalgamation, there was something called weighted voting on a few issues, and that topic is always up for debate. That's something that's not commonly done in municipalities across the province. And I think the idea behind that was that Ward 2 would have an equal voice at the council table. But typically, that's not how things are done. So, yeah, I don't want to stray too far away from your question.
No, by all means, please do.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems. There's an expectation quite often for Ward 2 people to have town hall meetings, for instance, listen to the complaints, and then be able to come to council and make those changes. But with two people representing that voice, the process doesn't allow for that.
It sounds like something from our history of representation by population.
This is perhaps a
new reform movement.
Right.
What are the patterns of growth forecast for Ward 2?
So right now we have, this is a very important question, because since this has launched, there's been some misinformation that the ward boundary will include a zoning change and that we're going to be losing agricultural land once the boundaries are changed for the voting. That's not the case. An official plan review and a zoning review and a ward boundary review are all very different things. They may impact each other and you may need to consider them when you're making a decision, but they're not one and the same. So the county brought forward a urban and commercial plan about a year ago, showing where the growth would go for Port Hope. And then, of course, we know we have Wesleyville. We don't know for sure if that will happen or when, and we don't know if that will be business and industry or if there will be population down there. We also had some areas in our hamlets, such as Garden Hill and Oseka, that were zoned development but have been rezoned agricultural, and that was a mandate that came from the province a couple of years ago. So most of the growth is staying south of the 401.
In the past, Port Hope has experienced a low growth rate compared to other municipalities in Northumberland County, according to the strategic priorities identified by the Litton consultants in 2023. Is that still true today?
I think it still is. True today. I don't actually have the numbers, but when we look at the development coming into Port Hope compared to our neighbors to the west, Clarington, for instance, we don't have a lot of growth at this time. But that's not to say it's not coming. It's right next door. So
if growth is not the criteria by which this will be done solely, what other criteria do you think has to be taken into consideration?
Well, I think some of the questions that have come forward so far, especially in our consultations, we've all had one-on-ones with the consultant. And some of the discussions that I've had anyway is, how are the different areas of our municipality different as far as needs and services? So, for example, the area immediately north of the 401, Welcome and up to Canton, are very, very different than up at Oseka and Elizabethville. For us, it's you get in the car and it's a minute down either highway and you're in the urban area. Whereas far off in the more rural areas, some of those residents don't even come into Port Hope. They'll go to neighboring communities because they're closer. So things like that, there may be distinct differences as far as representation goes on council.
But there's also another one which we haven't talked about and you haven't mentioned, and that is the urban-rural split.
Well, it may play into it. And I think that's how some people are feeling, that with this, we will lose our agricultural and rural identity if the boundaries are redrawn. And I think that's what I was kind of getting at. Some areas of our rural community are rural, but not agricultural. So where I am, for example, I don't have big, huge farm fields. There are small businesses in this area that are not agricultural. So that is very different than to the west, where we do have primarily agriculture.
Just for the listener who might not know where you live, can you just indicate where it is?
Oh, so I'm just north of the 401, just off of between County Road 10 and County Road 28. So near the Canton area. This pocket directly north of the 401. I'm not to say there isn't agriculture here, but it's not. There is also pockets of very dense rural housing in this area as well.
You've already alluded to the Wesleyville project, which is, again, off in the future. But how is that going to impact your discussions? How big a factor is it going to be?
I don't think it will be a big factor at this point. I think potentially setting up the boundaries, potentially to consider that in the future, is something we need to think about. But that could take decades, and we don't know how much extra population that would bring to Port Hope in general. There is some of those people working in that community may be coming from our neighboring communities, Coburg and Clarington. And then where, if they are moving into Port Hope, where would that be? Would that be out near Wesleyville, or would that still be in the boundaries of the current urban area?
One could see how easily that could become a focal point for debate at this time. If you're pushing to have a certain agenda, that can be emphasized, or as you're talking about, it could be considered down the road. How much are you concerned that this might distort any discussions going forward?
I'm not sure that it would distort a whole lot of discussion. I think it may cause certain people to speculate. Why is this boundary review being done now? It must be because of Wesleyville. But I think at the council table, I'm not so sure that that would have a huge impact on the decisions. And I think there's a number of other factors that are more prominent than Wesleyville at this time.
Well, can we talk about some of those other factors then? What other pressures or trends are you seeing that are affecting the town that would generate this need for a review?
Well, I think there's the idea of, how I said before, the weighted vote and having equal representation. There's also other, I don't know the motives behind all conversations and decisions that others make, but some things of concern for people are the LLRW funds. That stands for Low Level Radioactive Waste, which was a fund, two different funds for the rural and urban area. And those funds get used towards the levy every year. There's police and the two different police services we have. We have two different rural roads groups, and they operate at different areas. And the funding that goes into those groups has historically come from it all comes from the same levy, but it's into two different centers. I'll say we have a rural work center out in Canton, and then we have an urban one down on Victoria Street. We have some other things too. We have waste and recycling. The rural area doesn't have that. Water and wastewater is urban primarily, and transit's urban. So there's a number of different things that some people in the rural area want and some don't want, and perhaps some people in the urban area want and don't want. So all of those things come into question right now. And I don't know if they're the motive behind this being brought forward, but they're certainly on people's minds.
There's a long and fraught history behind the current situation. And if I recall correctly, the town and the former Hope Township amalgamated in 2001 during a wave of amalgamations that took place across Ontario. Has this amalgamation ever settled with Ward 2 residents?
With a portion of Ward 2 residents, no, it has not. as a representative from Ward 2, representing the voice of all the people, I try very hard to hear all points of view on it. We do have people that are new to the community who have come from rural communities elsewhere who are surprised by the friction that we have here in Port Hope. It doesn't exist in every community where there is a rural and urban divide. And there are people who have once had some friction, but have since changed their mind about things. And then we do have a portion of the community that very much still is not happy about the amalgamation.
So when you look at this mixture, how are you interpreting it as you go to the table to have your discussions?
Well, I also consider Ward 1 too. I look at it, I don't just isolate myself to the opinions of Ward 2. I consider all opinions. And Ward 1 is also divided as to older residents that enjoyed Port Hope a certain way, and then now newer residents who are in new developments and or have moved into the older areas. Everybody has a different point of view. So I hear all points of view. I sometimes the more less popular one is the quiet voice. Quite often those who make the loudest voice, it makes it difficult for those who have a different opinion to speak out, but I hear them all and I consider them all. And unfortunately, sometimes I have to take the most fair, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it is fortunate that I try to take the most fair point of view, but it may not be the most verbal point of view that's out there on social media and so on.
You referred earlier to the low-level radioactive waste fund. And I know there's been a lot of controversy how the money was spent by the town. And I think there was even an attempt to take it to the Supreme Court of Canada at one point. How significant does this play in these discussions?
So the low-level radioactive waste funds, we have a rural and urban fund, and we get reporting on that. It comes forward to council, and it's available to the public every year where those funds are sitting. And during the budget, we see what the fund is, and some of the funds are applied towards levies for each ward, the taxpayers of each ward. So the question will come into play now, though, if the ward boundaries are redrawn, how do we determine which households fall under which bucket of low-level radioactive waste? So are we still going to have that Ward 2, Ward 1 divide on some of these legacy issues?
For listeners who may not be familiar with this, because this goes back quite a ways, what is the low-level radioactive waste fund? What's its history?
So not getting into too much depth, but we had El Dorado here in Port Hope. Cameco now operates out of the same facility. So it was a uranium facility where we, at one point, there was high-level radioactive waste, which has been removed, and then now there's low-level radioactive waste still existing around the community. It was displaced in certain spots. So there is a significant environmental cleanup in Port Hope. There was some, most of the low-level radioactive waste was left in the urban area, some over in Clarington, a little bit in the rural area. But now we have a big facility, which is actually in the rural area. All the contaminated soil is being dumped in that facility. So there was an agreement made, a lot of legal conversations and so on, and each of the wards was given a $10 million pool of money, I guess, a fund that could be used however they wish.
And I believe it was supposed to be used once the amalgamation took place to offset taxes.
Yes, and it still is. There is a portion of the earnings every year that go towards the levy. So for those who watch the budget meetings, you'll see that they come up with the average cost per property, and then they take the LLRW funds, a portion of that, and apply it towards Ward 1 budget or levy and Ward 2 levy.
Speaking of taxes, there have been statements made like Ward 2 taxes have risen 110% versus the town where the increase has been 17%. Are any of those statements true? Have the taxes gone up equally?
Well, the taxes have, Don't want to get into too much of a controversial topic here because different people have different interpretations. And we actually did a financial review of this earlier this year. We directed staff to find a third party to review it because the interpretations are quite controversial. I would say, no, the taxes have not been totally equal over time. We did have a phasing in period where there was payback from Ward 2 towards Ward 1. So every year we come up with a levy and then Ward 2 would pay a little bit more and that money that would go towards 1 and offset their balance. So it has been higher over the past 10 years for sure for Ward 2 residents.
Earlier in our conversation, you referred to the system of representation, two representatives versus four. But when you're around the table and you're discussing things, is there any difference in the way that council treats issues in terms of debate and decisions when it comes to Ward 2 and Ward 1?
No, I don't think so. I think organically, it's all one municipality. I think that there is that, I try to encourage my Ward 2 neighbors to contact Ward 1 counselors about issues. I live here. I know the issues. I understand it. I'm your neighbor. If you want that voice heard, you need to speak to the other counselors as well. They will listen to whatever you bring forward. If it comes just from me, it may be perceived as my point of view. But if they hear from the residents firsthand, then they know that that is for sure coming from the voice of the community.
But have there been issues in the past where you've been trying to champion something that is related to Ward 2 and it's not, you're not feeling you're being heard, or maybe council's not taking what you're asking seriously?
I think that comes into play, and I think that has to do with geography. I think that when you're not out here regularly and you don't physically see it and live in within these boundaries, it's not as meaningful, I think. So I don't think that I've never felt at the council table that anything I've brought forward has been rejected because I'm Ward 2, but perhaps not understood or prioritized in the same way because it's not a lived experience.
In the Watson and Associate recent report, it suggested local democracy feels weaker because everyone is not represented equally. Is that true in your mind? Do you agree with the report?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I don't think there is equal representation right now. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Is the ward system outdated in your mind? And what could be a potential alternative as you see it?
I do have issues with the way it is right now. And what I would say to the community is that I think that especially the rural area, I have heard fear and rejection, skepticism, not to change it. Yet, at the same time, it's acknowledged that they're underrepresented. So I'm not sure that doing nothing is the answer. That just puts us right where we are. We know the weighted vote is not typically done anywhere. Other communities can get on with it. So I don't think holding on to that weighted vote is the answer either. So I think now we have an opportunity to say, okay, well, is there a way to redraw some boundaries where we can get a greater rural voice or where someone can come in maybe because they just crossed that boundary and represent the rural area where they didn't we wouldn't potentially, for example, if the boundaries cross over into the rural area, we may get three or four people voted in who actually live rurally if those boundaries cross over the two areas. So I think that there is a possibility that there could be greater representation before shutting the door on that.
I think what you're proposing is one single municipality. Did I hear that?
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important we keep our rural identity. I think that's very important. But I think there's mechanisms in place to keep that rural identity. And I don't think a line saying Ward 1 and Ward 2 is the only way of keeping that rural identity.
I guess an alternative might be Ward 3 and Ward 4, maybe even Ward 5.
Yes, and that's kind of what I was getting at. If there are potentially four or five wards or six wards, some of those wards may cross over between rural and urban, and then you may have representation. Another thing to consider as well is some municipalities, when you're elected in a ward and one person is elected, that person is responsible for everything in that ward, and as well as the hearing from the community. So even if a ward one person was, or sorry, I shouldn't say ward one, someone living in an urban area was elected, they may still have to travel out to that rural area that it crosses over to represent that community. Whereas right now, they don't necessarily need to. So there could be opportunities, but I don't know. We have to wait and see what's proposed.
The review emphasizes public consultation and input. How is that going to be accomplished?
So right now there's a survey online. You can find it on the Port Hope website, but I believe there's a number of people who've shared it on social media as well. So that's the first survey. So everybody's welcome to take that survey. We also have three different community sessions. We have one this Wednesday on September 17th out in Canton at the Hub there from 6 to 8. We have one in town on the 18th, which is Thursday, at the Mary J. Benson Branch in Port Hope. And then we have one at the Jack Berger Complex the same day. So 2 to 4 at the library, 6 to 8 at Jack Berger. And it's a drop-in. There'll be people there willing to answer any questions and receive feedback. And I think what's important, and the message I would send to the community, is instead of rejecting everything based on assumptions or misinformation or fear, bring a solution. What is the solution to fair representation? And I think that's the best way forward.
I know in 2014, there was a call for a re-examination of the amalgamation, and there was talk that Hope Township should be reinstated and Port Hope be reinstated. Is that even an option?
Well, that's certainly talked about by some members of the community out here in Port Hope. There are certain individuals that want to go back to being only Port Hope Township, and there's also discussion about joining neighboring rural municipalities. Whether that's an option from the provincial level, I don't know. That's a question that you would need to ask your MPP or the provincial government. It's not a decision that us locally could make.
No matter how much politicians and consultants want to ensure that all voices are heard, there are always those that will say they did not get a chance, or what assurances can you give that all voices will be heard?
Well, we have a number of different opportunities for our rural community to be heard. So the nice thing about Port Hope is once we're elected, you can call anyone. So the current system, yes, I'm in Ward 2 and we have four people in Ward 1, but I get called by Ward 1 individuals all the time. People who know me, people who know my skill set and my professional background will just choose to call me for whatever reason. So you always have all councillors and the mayor available. We also have our council meetings. We've revamped that. So we have deputations, we have delegations. Right now we also have question period. We have different online portals, report an issue. We have surveys quite often, and then you can also just email individuals or else email admin. So we have a number of different places where you can be heard.
What about low-income people, though, or the unhoused and other marginalized groups? Mm-hmm. How are you going to ensure that they're heard?
Yeah, so that's a challenge, more challenging one, of course, and that's not unique to Port Hope. That's across the province. So we do have different groups that are kind of trying to address that. We do have two councillors in Port Hope that have sort of spearheaded a Housing for All initiative, trying to reach those individuals. We had, you know, different other organizations such as Cornerstone and Greenwood Coalition and different outreach groups and stuff. We have the Youth Center coming. We have our Port Hope Police as well, who do a great job just on the ground trying to speak to those individuals. But that is definitely something that is a challenge, and I don't see that going away anytime soon.
What about Indigenous, the duty to consult?
Yeah, so we have, as a council, I don't think this term, but last term, we took a course that was designed by First Nations and Métis. It was an excellent course. Our mayor is very closely connected with the chief up in Alderville. We do have continuous consultation with Alderville, Curve Lake, Scugog, and that is becoming more and more normal, which is great to see. And right from big decisions to small decisions, Wesleyville, for instance, the Heritage Village of Wesleyville, Friends of Wesleyville, have a great relationship with Alderville as well. So it's great to see that it's becoming more and more inclusive across all areas.
Social media and the internet often present challenges for communication and getting information out, and also for generating a lot of misinformation and disinformation. What's your thoughts on this in this particular case going forward?
So I had a social media account. I no longer, unfortunately, have one. And that is partially because of the misinformation and the just the unhealthy unhealthy behaviors that come through. But it has also been quite interesting because it also allows me to see the point of view of somebody who doesn't have social media and doesn't engage in social media. How are they getting information and what are they hearing as well? So it's been interesting that way. So I think that there is a lot of misinformation, and the misinformation is going quickly. As I said, there is the idea that a ward boundary review is a zoning review. This is going to take away our farmland that's circulating on social media. That is what I've heard from other people. And that couldn't be more false. It may eventually someday, but they do not go hand in hand.
Well, if that's one example and we've only just started, what about going forward though? I mean, how serious a problem could this be, and how might it impact the consultations and the eventual final decisions?
Yeah, so that's it. Your very first question that you asked about the timing it's a big one, because this is absolutely going to carry into the election. It will be an election topic. Whether we have the boundary review by next fall set and ready to go, or whether it's still being discussed, it will definitely be a topic of discussion.
Well, then let me ask you this directly then. Should this be an election issue so people can run on it rather than council making the decision prior to the municipal election in the fall?
Yeah, potentially. So I think what's very important is that we need to see what the consultants bring forward. Are they going to bring forward six different wards? Are they going to have one ward where you elect at large? Are they going to keep it the same? Are we going to have a deputy mayor who's elected or appointed? Are we going to have a deputy mayor? All these are questions that we don't know yet. So this is going to come forward. And yeah, to your point, maybe it is great that it's coming out during an election time.
But I guess what I'm asking you, and I apologize if I wasn't clear, I'm asking you if council should decide now that no matter what comes forward and whatever discussions are going to be held, that a decision is not made until after the election, so that people can vote and people can, various politicians and people who are running for office can take a stand, and then the people will decide. That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, well, I don't know how it will go. So there is the option potentially to defer. We could always defer until after the election, or we can try to push this through, but I don't know. It's too early for me to decide on how this will play out next year. and what will be healthy and what won't be healthy. Because ultimately, we want fair representation. That's what we want. We want everybody to be heard, and we want everyone to be understood. So I don't know the answer. I really don't.
Is this Port Hope's version of Brexit?
It might be. I don't know. I need to be clear, too, that it was not a unanimous vote that this happened at this time. So it was, I believe it was 5-2. So it did carry, but it wasn't unanimous. And I think and part of the concern was the timing. It wasn't that we shouldn't have a review. It was the timing.
Just for the record, how did you vote?
I voted no. And for me, I can tell you it was the timing.
So what's next?
I mean, like everything, we talk about it. We try to control the rumors and the misinformation. We try to, myself anyway, think objectively and encourage the community to think objectively. If this is going to happen, what would be the best case scenario? And make that known. What do you want to see? Give us that feedback. There's a lot of money spent on this. That was part of the notice of motion. It was clearly spelled out who the consultant is that we will hire and how much money will be spent on the different portions of this project. So, you know, do we want to waste that money, or do we want to make the most of that, those funds that have been spent, and get something that really suits our community?
Again, for the listeners, how much money has been allotted for this?
Oh, I should have wrote it down. I think it's around $230,000 altogether, the different stages that are required. But I will encourage people to look that up, because I might be wrong, but it's a significant amount.
Vicky Mink, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
That was Port Hope Deputy Mayor Vicky Mink. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.